The next talk will be by Xingqi Liang, and he's going to talk again on 1As, extracting type 1A exposure mechanisms by the nucleosynthetic yields.
Okay, thank you, the organizers again for inviting me to this conference to give a talk and also the chance to visit Greece. So far the weather is very nice for me. So I'm a project researcher of the Kavli IPMU, the University of Tokyo. So today I will talk about how we use the supernova nucleosynthesis data to constrain supernova explosion mechanism. So this work is collaborated with Professor Ken Ishinomoto and also Professor Chiaki Kobayashi in the University of Hertfordshire. So we all know there are so many supernova spectrum and light curves. So how should we deal with this data? So the astronomer get this data, and then by this data they can derive the abundance ratio, such as the nickel ratio for nickel 56 to nickel 57, or different element ratio, nickel over manganese. And by this ratio, they can give constraint on the explosion progenitor. Let's say the initial mass, the initial metallicity. And this will also tell you what is the preferred explosion model. For example, we mentioned the transsigma mass model or the subtransigma mass model, also depending on the deflagration detonation transition or double detonation model. And for us, the theoretical modeling, then we use this model to produce the light curve this direction, or we combine the model and the progenitor to calculate what is the theoretical abundance ratio. So first, of course, we will do the transsigma mass model, which is the explosion of a carbon oxygen white dwarf. So here shows the color plot of how this deflagration developed into detonation and burned the whole white dwarf. The red means hot and the blue means cold. You can see suddenly the detonation takes place and then the whole star simply explodes in a very fascinating way with a lot of spherical features here. So we have done a lot of these kind of models, about 50, from sampling a lot of mass near the transsigma mass with a range of metallicity, including also center and off-center burning. So off-center burning means the flame starts from somewhere outside. And similar practice has been done on the subtransigma mass model. So where we start with a helium envelope, so you can see the helium detonation at first burn around the envelope, and then the convergence of the shock can trigger the second detonation, namely the carbon detonation. And then this carbon detonation will gradually propagate inward to the center of the star and burn everything. So this one is a little bit slower, but you can see once it burns to the core, then everything just is disrupted. For the subtransigma mass model, we have a wider range from 0.9 to 1.25 solar mass with a range of helium mass, so to very low to a very thick one. Some of the thick one may be more like theoretical values, but some of them are really thin one, and also a range of metallicity. Again, we have built a number of models here. So first, before we go to the how to use this nucleosynthesis yield, we will first look at what is produced by these two types of supernova. So first, with the transsigma mass model. So we take the benchmark model here. All the details about the technical details here. So we will focus on this figure, which is the scale mass fraction for different mass number. So the scale mass fraction is this. You take the ratio to iron 56 in the model and then divide it by the sun and then take the log scale. So zero means it has the same ratio as the sun. And the two lines means you are the two times and half of the solar value. So you can see that most of the transsigma mass model produce most of the iron peak element around here and most of the major alpha chain elements such as silicon to calcium here. Others are not mainly produced by type 1A supernova, so you can see a lot of the points here. And one particular interest will be the manganese here, so you can see manganese is well produced by the transsigma mass model. And here is the subtransigma mass model, so this is the same kind of plot. Again, I've showed this the technical detail, how we define the benchmark model here, and you can see that most of the iron peak element are well produced by this class of supernova. However, the alpha chain elements are slightly underproduced. One major difference from the China Sigma mass model will be, you can see this point we plot it here. The mechanism is very underproduced compared to China Sigma mass model. And this minor difference will become more evident when we do the application in the observational data. So now we know what kind of elements are produced by both type 1a supernova, and then we'll try to use our model to explain some of the observational data. So first is the light curve. So we know that after a few hundred days of explosion, the supernova become transparent, and then we can extract some of the radioactive decays of other isotopes by comparing the difference. So Grauer has already done it in 2016 for the 2012 CG supernova. So you can see that by comparing the difference from the expected nickel 56 decay and the actual one, he can derive how much decay comes from this nickel 57. Of course, now there are more discussion in how to really interpret the gap, because there can be contribution from the light echo or non-LTE effect and so on. But assume this is what his value is correct, then we can already do something on this supernova. So here is the plot. So the iron 57, and namely the nickel 57, versus the iron 56, namely the nickel 56. So the plot is a bit messy here, but it includes all the information we need. So we have a number of supernova here, but we will of course focus on this 2012 CG. So different colors correspond to different mass from 1.30 to 1.38 solar mass. And along the line, it corresponds to the model from zero metallicity to very high 5 solar metallicity. So we can see that this model lies to along this direction, quite high metallicity and also quite low mass around this region. The star here means the benchmark model I just mentioned in previous slides. And similar practice can be applied to other supernova as well. So for example, the 2014J, so it will be even higher metallicity and higher mass. On the other hand, the 2011 FE is quite far from this point. And then we can also look at the subtronic Sigma mass model. So the plot is almost the same, the nickel 57 versus nickel 56. And then this time, slightly different is that when you increase the mass, you go to this direction. So different colors from the low mass increase to one from 0.9 up to 1.2 solar mass here. And you have different curve because you can pick different value of the helium envelope. And again, the benchmark model is here, so you can see that these models are still in a good range to be explained by the subtronic Sigma mass model. And also one more important difference is that now 2011 FE can be better explained by the subtronic Sigma mass model. And of course, by looking at this point, one can also give some constraint on what is the expected helium envelope mass of this object too. And then the second application will be the supernova remnant spectra. So Yamaguchi Hiroya has already measured the 3C397 spectra, and then he derived the element mass ratio of this object, so which is already a quite old object. I guess this is a very popular object, so I don't need me further explain it. And then based on the value he had, and then we can do the same similar exercise, but based on this element ratio. So we, again, this time we plot the manganese over iron versus the nickel over iron ratio, which is derived from the spectra. So again, we have a lot of data points here. So the same color means it has the same mass from 1.30 to 1.38, which is actually quite a narrow range of mass. And then we also, along the same line, we have 0 to 5 solar metallicity for the progenitor. And you can see that this point is actually very far from the benchmark model. So in order to approach this model, we need to go to both higher metallicity and also higher mass. in particular, this model is quite close to our higher limits where we have explored in our previous work. As I mentioned, the mechanism is an important criteria for distinguishing transsecond mass and subtranssecond mass model. So we will see how different it is for the subtranssecond mass model. So the result is here. So again, the mechanism is here and the nickel is here. So you can see that most of the points now are much under this point, the observational point. And one notice is that now when you increase the mass, you go to this direction. So this is the lower mass models of the lower mass, and this is the model of a higher mass. But there is only one model which can get quite close to this this point. Why is that? Because the mass is so low, basically it produces very little iron in the explosion, and therefore the denominator becomes very small and enhance the whole fraction. So it is different from what we have in the transsecond mass model, where it tried to produce more mechanisms to approach to this point. For the transsecond mass model, it tried to approach this point by suppressing the iron production. So this shows that in terms of possibility, the subtranssecond mass model is less favored because you have to really challenge to the lower iron limit, and this can be a lot of uncertainty here. The last application I want to show to how to use observational data to constrain explosion model is the galactic chemical evolution. So this work is collaborated with Chiaki Kobayashi. So we sent her the abundance yield data, and then she used her galactic chemical evolution code to compute how the actual element evolved in the history of the galaxy. So the point here are the data point from the stars near the solar neighborhood. So these are again the same bracket abundance ratio in the log scale, and this is the metallicity of the star. So we will focus on both the manganese and nickel. So two curves here we first focus on is the red one and the green dotted one for the manganese. So you can see that the green dotted one is only considering subtranssecond mass channel for the Taiwanese supernova, and the red one consider pure transsecond mass channel. So you can see that immediately, you can see that the effect. If you want to explain the mechanistic trend in the solar neighborhoods of the stars, we need at least 50 or 75% of transsecond mass model, or even pure transsecond mass channel in order to fit this trend. If you just consider subtranssecond mass channel, it never can reach this high value here. And similar results apply for the nickel. If you want to explain this bunch of stars here, assuming the previous one come from core collapse supernova, then you can't have pure subtranssecond mass channel in our history of the universe. We must have at least 50 to 75% of transsecond mass supernova. So my conclusion here is that we have already used some of the recent data which we can find in the literature to derive some constraint on the supernova explosion mechanisms. So for the supernova remnant, the transsecond mass model gives a better explanation than the subtranssecond mass one. On the other hand, for the supernova light curve, some of the supernova cannot be explained by the transsecond mass model, but can be explained by the subtranssecond mass one, namely the 2011 FE. On the other hand, for the galactic chemical evolution, we still need, at least in the solar neighborhood, a significant number of transsecond mass white dwarf in order to explain the element evolution trend. So of course, I hope in the future we have more collaboration we will have more supernova remnant isotope or element distribution data so that we can derive more constraint on those progenitors. And of course, one of future question is how to reproduce observed diversity, because we now have more than 1,000 supernova observed per year. So what can we do with all this data, and can we give us a more consistent picture in how to classify or distinguish these two mass models. So thank you.
Questions?
It's coming. What about the EAD? EAD, edge lit detonator.
Can you repeat the question?
Yeah, the EAD.
Edge lit detonation, I think is the question. What about that? Are you saying in comparison to this particular scenario? How would the nucleosynthesis change?
For which two model you mean change from?
Distinguish from those by the
Mainly the manganese will be, and nickel will be the key, because these are the two in the previous slide. So I didn't pay much focus much of the nickel, because somehow it also can be balanced by other isotopes, but manganese is the major element. If you can measure, especially in the X-ray band, then it will help us a lot to give the answer.
Here? Should I go?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. So toward the end of your talk, you mentioned that the majority of type 1As in the Milky Way would be the Chandrasekhar mass channel. So it is quite difficult to make these through binary evolution. But I'm just wondering, I mean, maybe have you considered it's possible that you can make enough manganese through the sub-Chandrasekhar mass channel when you have a white dwarf close to, but not quite at the Chandrasekhar mass, like, say, a 1.3 or maybe 1.25? Maybe Ivo would know this.
So two points. So one is that if it is close to 1.25 or 1.3, then it could create also a huge amount of nickel. Then it will be always overluminous. And then second, in general, detonation does not flavor the production of manganese, because it's too fast for the electron capture to take place in order to produce the mother nuclei of manganese 55, namely the cobalt 55.
Okay.
Yeah, hello. Comparing these two models, the Chandrasekhar and sub-Chandrasekhar, in the supernova remnant phase, apart from the spectra differences that you do expect, do you expect any other differences, like in terms of dynamics or morphology? The one will produce more symmetric, the other more asymmetric?
Yes. Actually, if you talk about the sub-Chandrasekhar mass model, Sabrina already gave a very beautiful animation, so the detonation will be enhanced in the polar direction rather than this equatorial direction. On the other hand, for the Chandrasekhar mass model, I guess it will be too long to play it. If you remember, this also feels quite spherical. So the morphology will be different from the jet structure, from a more spherical structure for the Chandrasekhar mass model. And of course, this whether this is a spherical or jet, of course, give you different distribution of the elements in the space too.
When you derive the 57 nickel to 56 nickel mass, then from these very late observations, then you really have to worry about both radiative transfer, NLT, and especially time-dependent effects. So how do you treat these?
My answer is I never do this by myself. So I read the data from the literature. So namely, for the 2012 CG, I read this paper.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So yeah. It is beyond my expertise, so I only trust the value that they provide.
Well, that's been treated in very different ways in different papers.
So that's why I mentioned about those light echo and non-LTE effect too.
Yeah. Okay.
A If there's no other questions, let's thank Xingqi one more time.
Thank you very much.